Welcome to the Love Out Loud podcast. And if you're new to our tribe, on behalf of the entire global family, just so you know, we love you. You're a part of a collective of millions now in over 40 countries around the world devoted to revolutionizing our views on love, global leadership, challenging systems of fear, and creating a new earth together. Love Out Loud takes you on a journey of learning how to love yourself and realizing your unlimited potential so that together we can create a unified and compassionate world. Our membership is the heart of our ever-growing global family, and we would love to see you in there. Join us for free now by clicking the link below. Welcome to the Love Out Loud podcast. And if there was ever to be a face other than my own in the encyclopedia of Love Out Loud, I just have a feeling that you would definitely be a powerful candidate. Because the theory, the philosophy of Love Out Loud is all about finding that love inside of you, whatever that is, and then expressing that completely unapologetically. And Jacuzzi and I met in Costa Rica at Envision Festival at our beautiful friend Virginia's camp that she was running. And I was literally, I think I was just like, who is this magical unicorn of a creature? I think what were my exact thoughts.
What was the first impression like? When was the first time that we saw each other?
You were running into the Humans I Trust camp with the boombox and I think squealing and in a bungee smuggler. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. Maybe that's just where my memory that sort of like seems like an associative outfit that you were wearing. Potentially that jacket, actually. And then just like revving people up with what looked like no specific kind of objective other than just to absolutely cut loose in the moment. And that's what I really want to talk to you about, because people struggle to do this. And I want to talk about the healing benefits of just not giving a fuck and letting yourself be totally encapsulated by the moment. But here is where we're going to begin. I want you to summarize your life philosophy in one sentence. One sentence, Jacuzzi.
Oh my gosh. I want to echo so many things you've said about unapologetic expression, love as a state of being, love as expression that doesn't need to be romantic. So many things I stand for. Our movements are very much aligned. And my life philosophy in one sentence, gosh, you know, I've written pages and pages on my life philosophy, and I've started writing on Medium. And so let me just crunch all the data
into one sentence.
And I would say, spread joy and belonging selflessly for your happiness.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Flawless.
And, you know, I could make it more technical and we could talk about dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, endorphins. We could talk about, you know, the first follower effect. We could talk about, the war on negative self-talk. There's a lot of different principles. And this is really my research. And so I am a party scientist, and party science is really the science, the methods behind bringing joy, light, and belonging into these situations where no one has the courage. There's no safety to really spark that. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, a networking event, an airplane, a subway train, even like just a public beach. I like to go into these situations and I like to catalyze love, and I like to break the shell of expression in that situation so that everyone else can start to express themselves unapologetically. And my belief is that we all have limitless joy and positivity within us. And, you know, joy and positivity and love, it's really one in the same, one in the same. I believe that we are limitless sources of joy and positivity. And what my art form is how do I unleash that in crowds? How do I unleash that in interactions as well? And so I've been geeking out over the last 5 months about the science, but I've also, you know, traveled and I've met epic humans like you, and I've interviewed people like you to figure out the science. And so I really, you're a party scientist as well, right? I mean,
just low key, it's like,
just low key.
No one really knows it, but everyone's having a good time, you know. Everyone's just relaxing into it, you know.
I think that's like the next level of party science is it's taking
the master's the most unassuming. The master's the most unassuming.
Taking a step back and just like, you know, secretly rotating the dials and taking a step back and being a silent influence, a silent positive influence on a group, on a community. That is so powerful as well. And mine is a lot more, my style is a lot more out loud. And that's the story that you shared, right? Of our first encounter at Envision.
Although I can see, and I want to go there in our interview today. I really see the subtleties in you as well, Jacuzzi. And you just spoke to something that I'd love us to explore more deeply, which is your identification of how difficult people find it to feel safe.
Yes.
And although you're human, and I'm sure, like, I fundamentally believe that we give what we most want for ourselves. I always believe that we're giving what we most want. And I fully own that in my leadership. I give love because that's what I crave the most. That's what I want to see more of in the world. What has your journey been like to find safety in yourself?
Gosh. Yeah, you know, it's so easy to look at my Instagram or like my personal brand. As much as I like to practice vulnerability, people don't really think of my roots when they think of Jacuzzi. It's Jacuzzi now because Jacuzzi is trademarked.
No, we're going to get you that trademark. Fuck that.
So, you know, my journey has been something that I've really reflected on lately. In the process of rebuilding Vive during this pandemic, I've had to really think about my motives, think about the origin story of Vive. And I think that I really resonate with what you've said about our greatest gift to the world is something that perhaps we lacked, you know, and we discovered it for ourselves. And having received the gift and having filled that and fulfilled that in our lives, we're just so excited to share it with others.
And so abundant, you know, that's the limitlessness.
Yes, yes. And I think that, you know, Vive really had its roots in my years as a teenager. And, you know, I used to be a reactor. I used to be a sleepwalker, and I used to be I didn't have a lot of love. I didn't know how to love. I didn't know how to build relationships. And so when I was in grade 12, when I was 17, my patterns really had negative consequences, and I was working as a lifeguard, and I caused one of my students as a swim instructor. So I was a lifeguard and swim instructor. I made one of my students cry because of my lack of ability to promote safety. Yeah, I would say that I would break the safety in social environments, as opposed, I would say that I was doing the opposite back then. And isn't that as funny? Much, yeah.
No, and I, so just, I want to highlight that because I feel like that's a pattern so many people run, right? Because I think there's so much value in that, that often when we sort of assume a position of power and we start enforcing things, it's actually having the opposite effect. And where was that coming from in you? What was that? What was driving that ultimately? Was it insecurity? Was it not feeling enough that you had to step into that?
Yeah. You know, I really think that we can analyze our psychology to an extent. And I had a great upbringing. My dad and mom were extremely social and they hosted a lot of parties at my house. And so I was always surrounded by different people. And if you ask me, like, who inspired me to become a gatherer and a catalyzer of human connection, I would say a bunch of people that I met, you know, in Europe when I was doing my party expedition, or I met at Envision. But ultimately, subconsciously, it was probably my dad and mom, just for hosting so many dinners and so many parties at during my upbringing. But back to my story and to your question, ultimately, I just didn't learn. I don't think very many people are as intentional about human connection and their relationships as they are about their diet and how they work out. We have all these techniques for business, for, you know, feeding ourselves, for managing our physical bodies. But in terms of our social well-being, we really just accept all the social conditioning that our world transmits to us. And it's kind of just this passivity. And lately I've been realizing and seeing this in all the interactions that I'm involved with. I'll see people speak over one another. I'll see people talk about themselves as opposed to express curiosity. And so ultimately, I think I made people cry and I made people feel disempowered during this first job that I have, that I lost. My first job, I lost because all my coworkers hated me. They didn't want to help me get my job back. And I made people feel like crap. And I think it was really just because, one, pretty much a lack of EQ, a lack of the impact that I was having on others.
Yeah, so powerful. And to actually just, you know, the reason I wanted to go into that is because I feel like so many people are running that and they actually probably have awareness that the way that they're being or the way that they're showing up is creating a polarization, but they just don't know why they're doing what they're doing or how to change it. So that journey of development, you know, I think a really important thing is to actually be patient with ourselves and recognize exactly what you're saying. Not many of us learned it. And you can't expect, you know, it doesn't matter if you're 40 years old, if you were never taught how to drive a car, you're not going to know how to drive. Age is not a component. You don't hit a particular age and you're like, oh yeah, now I'm, you know, I'm super aware and I know how to engage in my relationships and I'm emotionally intelligent. Like, I feel like we need to have so much more compassion with ourselves to even be able to begin the journey of like, oh, okay, this is an area that I'm not excelling in and I need to learn. And I'm not going to put the expectation on myself to have already known this.
We can't expect ourselves to be experts in these very, like, human relationships are complicated and, you know, we're not all Esther Perel, right?
How great is she though?
Yeah, she's legendary and you know, people like her as well as Amy Amudson have you know, resulted in me having this on my phone, right? It just reminds me to embody Vive. And for me, what that means is, how do I produce permission in an interaction for someone to express themselves?
Yeah.
And when I'm impatient and when I'm, you know, closed, like literally just your body posture, I'm not embodying Vive. I'm not in a pro-social state. But yeah, for me, like I wanted to share the first journal entry that I made, because once I started regularly monitoring my behavior and pretty much just being more aware of the impact I was having on others. And with that awareness comes pain. Because if you don't have an awareness of how people are responding and the mistakes that you've made, you know, there's no pain where there's no awareness. And so my first journal entry, I was working as a medic at a giant music festival, and I was hanging out with my friend. His name is Grassfed Jeff. And he was dressed in spandex with a toy sword and like this headband, totally shirtless. And I witnessed this man go through the crowd to the very front of the arena and just emit pure expression, just like pure, like flexing facial expression. Toy sword was like flinging in the air, and everyone around him gravitated toward him. His expression enabled so many other people to get more into the experience. And that's when I realized, like, holy crap, expressing yourself out loud is one way to create that safety. Expression, you got to role model it. It's, you know, if someone comes home with wonderful news and you're neutral, you're just like, you have this impression management system operating.
Interesting way of putting it.
People aren't going to express sadness or joy around you if you're just constantly neutral, right? Yeah.
Wow. And there's so many elements that I want to dive into. I think that the term that you just coined is super interesting. Expression management. Okay. So one, what is the culture scape? Like, what the F is the culture scape that we've been living in that has conditioned us to manage what is most innate and natural, which is our self-expression? And what are some ways that you break through in your science of partying and helping people find that expression? I would love, because there's so much value you can give to this audience. I'd love them to have like practical things that they can start actioning and doing and giving to others, like ultimately giving to others and helping other people feel the way that you want to feel.
Yes. And I've really approached this as a party scientist would. And I have Excel sheets with almost like everything I've done at music festivals and things that I did at Burning Man.
Studies.
Yeah. And I really do want to write a book about party science.
You 1,000% should.
So the culture that we're living in has a lot of social norms that repress joy and playfulness and funky creativity and quirkiness. And it's really interesting because there's a lot of research that suggests that that's the way to stand out, and it has the opposite effect of what we think. And I think that's, you know, so common just in so many other situations, right? We think that playing small is the safest option, when really the greatest risk is in inaction and in is in like just being a spectator, right? Being a spectator versus being a participant. Mm. You know, I wrote an article about all these different cultural norms, and I what's coming to mind right now is the belief that people will not accept me if I am expressing myself authentically. It's the belief that people don't want to be approached and people don't want to be asked questions. And that belief is what leads to loneliness and leads to isolation. It's this, of course, there's so many circumstantial reasons as well, but these circumstances reinforce this belief that I cannot deal with my loneliness. Like people don't want to be around me. And so I think of talking to strangers. I think of going to music festivals and expressing myself. And I've really been able to break that belief. And I've been able to reprogram that belief to, wow, hold on a second. When I do express myself and when I am vulnerable, people open up. And I've just been noticing, right? We have this negativity bias, right? We notice one time where someone is, hey, Jacques, you're too much and I don't like you. I notice that one time and it reinforces the belief people won't accept me. I need to manage my impression and expression. And so I think really what first needs to happen is we need to gain an awareness of our minds and the interpreter, and we need to really disassemble that negativity bias, and we need to start noticing the times where we have expressed ourselves and it's led to beautiful connections with others. And we need to notice the time that we have looked at someone in the eyes and asked a great question and it's resulted in a beautiful, meaningful connection. And then the other thing is just your peer group. I mean, there's something called the fundamental attribution error. And the fundamental attribution error is a psychological phenomenon whereby we attribute so many human behaviors to disposition, to our character, when really it's just someone's context, someone's circumstances. And so
How often does that become someone's like whole frame? Like, it's like radical, like, and just like it can be throwaway sometimes. Like that person probably doesn't even believe that, or even that's people like talk shit all the time when it comes to their opinions, right?
Totally. And when
you're like open to that and you're like, you know, taking that on, how is that then impacting your ability to express yourself?
That's right. And what comes to mind is just the principle of not taking it personally and realizing that there's a reason why people are perceiving you in the way that they're perceiving you. If you're generally good intentioned and you know, you're asking someone questions and they respond with a cold shoulder or they criticize you. Like something's going on behind the scenes. And so I just think back to that principle of the four agreements, right? And this is the whole, like when someone hates on you, Nicole, like you have a system by which you can rationalize why that's okay and how you can accept that, right? And I think this is one of the key parts to not giving a fuck and to being able to express yourself is having that cognitive interpretation, right?
I just wanted to highlight that, like that and your capacity, which is only developed over time. And that's like, I feel people really need to take that away and like really start to, you can't, often people will wait till they have that capacity without ever training the capacity. Like, you've got to go and actually develop the fitness, develop, like, just be in the face of rejection. And I want to ask you this in a sec after you finish what you were just sharing. Sorry for interjecting. I want to ask you, like, what is the biggest risk you've taken that has, like, totally paid off? And what is the biggest risk you've taken that has absolutely just made you feel, like, completely, like, just oh my God, that's going to take some recovery time.
I love that we're talking about social risks because ultimately we can have all these cognitive models for deflecting negativity and we can have ways of being compassionate toward others who dislike our expression, and they dislike that I'm going to show up in a purple blazer to a professional networking event and high five people, right? They're going to dislike that. But I can have all these cognitive models that, like, I can have a frame for the world that makes me still express myself even when I'm around those people. But ultimately, how have I really embedded that frame into my life? Well, it's by taking social risks and having to use the frame when I'm in Berlin and I am on the train from the airplane to the airport and I'm playing a song on my boombox and someone looks at me in the eyes and says, people in Berlin are not going to like you.
Every person
horrible
in Berlin. Every single one of them.
That was probably the greatest rejection I've ever received in my life. And I just laughed. I laughed because I knew that something had happened to this person that I have no awareness of, but it must have been horrible. Because if they're seeing someone, Nicole, you've probably had an experience where there's been like some really loud, disruptive people having a good time in maybe a place that was meant to be like chill and quiet, right? Right? Like
usually like, me, yeah. I totally understand. Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, and we can also bring to mind the example of I call it the old grandma archetype. Okay, no joke. This is a theme. So having thrown like 400 street parties with no permission across the planet, there is the old grandma archetype who comes up to the party and who every is time. furious that young people are having fun and expressing themselves and singing. And you know what? It's because their frame is contaminated, right?
Yeah.
Like my frame is holy crap. Even if someone's like having like there's crazy, I just love crazy people, Nicole. I mean, we both do, don't we?
In my heart, deeply. I'm upset that you didn't change for my Zoom room though. That's the truth. I was waiting for it.
So let's We've talked a little bit about the importance of, and what I was going to say,
let me
finish my point. We were talking about social risks and we were talking about the fundamental attribution error. Essentially what I was getting at is you need to have a peer group that encourages you to stretch yourself socially. And if your peer group is continually pushing down your expression, then there's no way that you're going to be able to practice the cognitive models of reframing rejection and negativity. If you do not have that peer group in place, if you do not have the people encouraging you to be yourself, then fuck, like that's challenging. Yeah. That's challenging. And I'm so lucky, like downstairs is the founder of the Decentralized Dance Party. And he literally, he walks around with like these armband tassels and he has like 50, he owns 50 banana suits.
Of course he does. One for every day of every 2 months. Why would you not? He doesn't have to wash his banana suits for almost 2 months. That's commitment.
Speaking of that, so you know, right before the pandemic
hit. Where are you going at this point?
Speaking of banana suits, before the pandemic hit, I had traveled Europe for like 3 months straight, and I don't think I washed my banana suit once.
Wow. I mean, then 50 would have lasted you a decade, and that's who doesn't need that many banana suits? This is what I want to know.
Yeah, banana suits. We could really jump into a whole
series,
a whole science on the the safety created by banana suits.
Oh my, can we actually do another podcast episode specifically? I want to interview you and I want you to share on personal style. Yeah. How self-expression through style and also the social conditioning. And like, not enough people take risks. Yeah. Not enough people take risks in their style, in their fashion, and overthink things. And ultimately, like, by the time you've been in that constant state of overthinking and hesitation, you're not feeling good anyway, even if you look amazing. I would love to go into that probably another time. But that's such a big topic.
Yeah. And I love social conditioning and fashion are super related, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you are just following fashion, then are you being authentic, right? It's an interesting question, right? And I have in one sentence, I have an absence of fashion, I think. So yeah, juicy topic there. But so we're running out of time here. So let me see if I can dig into these social risks that you asked me. So the social risk that had horrible consequences and which just resulted in a crash and perhaps, gloom for me. And yeah, I immediately one comes to mind. And this was when I went to Europe with the company, which you'll see here. There's a sound box. Yeah, there's a sound box on my right. That's a speaker, right? And I worked with this company for a bit and I threw a party for them. And then I got invited to go to the Alps with them. And so I went to the Alps with them and I was a part of this influencer team. And in this influencer team, this was probably one of the worst moments of my life was this trip in the Alps, because I was completely ostracized for being so expressive and wild. And what happened during this trip, perhaps there was a moment, but essentially I am a lot for people and that's who I am. And so, a lot of people didn't like that about me and they don't like that. I approach conversation with a lot of questions and intensity, right? I'm intense. I want to know everything about the people in front of me. Oh my gosh. Have you heard about this? Like, have you heard about this theory? Have you ever learned about that? Shit. Let's go out and let's apply it right now.
Right now.
I'm going to go talk to this group of strangers. So that's actually one of the examples that I'll share. So I'm at the dinner table with this influencer team. And I am
on this trip
in the Alps. And what happens is one of the influencers says, hey, everyone, pay attention here. Hey, Jacques, do you want some water? And I hold up my glass. I'm like, hell yeah. And what he does is he pours the water and then pours it all over me.
What?
In front of the entire group. And the entire group laughed.
So it's straight up bullying.
Yeah, straight up.
Whoa.
So what I did, I said, fuck this crew. I'm going to go talk to everyone else in this restaurant. So I approached every other table and I started like giving them challenges and stuff. And I met like 20 people. I met like 30 people. I got everyone at these tables laughing. At one point I was like, hey, everyone, I need you to nominate the craziest party animal at your table. I have a gift for them. And so I got them all laughing together. And what happened the day after that is everyone at the influencer table was embarrassed that I was doing that. They were
Of course. That makes total sense. That makes total sense.
Wait, why?
Because they couldn't handle your resilience. Yeah. Like that you were making them feel powerless in your greatness. And then you're like, nah, not having it. I'm just going to go and claim myself in this other context. And they were just feeling like shame deep down. So then you just became the projection of that shame.
Yeah. And so one of the worst pieces of feedback I got on this trip, I don't have my hat and I know we're short on time, but this is good. So I was at an event. I went to a lot of events. It was a music festival in the Alps, right? And I would go to all these events and I would spread fun, right? I'd get people in huddles and I'd swing dance with girls and right. And at one point, like, you know, I'm a romantic dude. So like I put out my hand and I get girls to like grab my hand before I'm going to engage with them because I used to educate students on consent. And so I have this EQ, right? And what happened was one of the influencers perceived that as hypocrisy. He perceived it as me being like a predator. And that's what he said to the trip organizer. He said, I witnessed this guy like grabbing girls. And I just, it was like the gloomiest moment of my life because I wear a consent sticker on my hat, right?
Mm.
And so
you're just so misunderstood horrible. In that moment. So unseen.
Oh, so
misunderstood.
Yeah. So that trip was horrible, but I met the friends for a lifetime during this trip, including a guy who had like multiple onesies and he let me wear his onesie. And so when
did
all
this
these
stem from the banana suit, is this where you were introduced?
No.
Okay. Different
that's,
trip. Geez,
that's a long story. We got to dive into that another time. And then perhaps, the greatest risk, we can chat about that another episode because that is its own thing as well. But one of the greatest risks I have taken has been showing up alone in cities and meeting new people and going to events, showing up to events during my European trip. Mm-hmm. And meeting new people and integrating myself into communities by getting people to laugh and creating this fun atmosphere. And so that's what I did in New York. And I met like all the human connection professionals in New York. So those are some of the regular risks that I take. And then I also show up and crash weddings at Times Square.
Real life wedding crasher. So good. Okay, they were definitely doing a second interview. One of the other things I want to talk about in that interview is how taking these risks is putting you in the vibration of the people that you're wanting to connect with. I think that's such a potent message that I like. You know, people in Love Out Loud in the community, most of the time, especially if they're new to the community, the thing that they're wanting the most is that permission to just be out loud, be themselves. And it doesn't even necessarily mean always being extravagant in the way that Jacuzzi is. It could, your version of out loud, your version of expression, your version could be different. Like I'm quite a subtle person, but I'm still very expressed and I've had to find that within myself, what feels congruent to me, what makes me feel limitless, what makes me feel, you know, expansive. And that's ultimately your truth. That's how your truth is meant to feel. So to bring this full circle, I want you to leave these guys with like the top three practical, they could even be challenges. I was going to say tips, but maybe challenges that they can start to action as soon as they listen to this podcast.
Yeah. So here are my challenges. My challenges will lead you to progressively give to be less and less inhibited with your expression. And so looking people in the eyes and looking people in the eyes and being present with others. Two is asking more questions and learning the art of asking deeper questions that may be intrusive. And
take the risk.
Yeah. And so what you'll realize is, hold on, people love being asked questions that they're never asked. People love it when you create a space for them to share a story about their childhood, for example. So looking people in the eyes, that's great discomfort training. Two is asking questions that are deeper and really taking more of a curiosity approach in your interactions. And my third one would be so much of my joy are from simple interactions with people I don't know. And so I live by the principle of spreading joy to others who I don't know. So I think one of the most mini risks we can take is just by saying hello to more people and smiling at more people. I acknowledge strangers. I acknowledge people. And if I'm sitting beside someone, I acknowledge them and I wish them a good day. I call it public positivity. So number three is public positivity. And I think that these three things will gradually, it will program you and it will give you those mini social risks to start developing these strong sense of resilience. So that when you work with a bunch of influencers who ostracize you, you can jump back and crowd surf.
Just meet everyone else in the restaurant and still be so generous that you're giving them all gifts.
Yeah. I'm curious to Nicole, tell me, what is your main takeaway here? Like from this conversation?
There's many, Jacuzzi. You're so full of, nuggets of wisdom. And sometimes it takes me a little while to land what the greatest takeaway from each interview is. I love doing this. I love listening, but I feel like, honestly, it sounds cliche, but it's in the taking of the risk that we really start to reprogram the conditioning. And that's it. It's doing it. Like you need to go out and do it. It's not, if this is like the 10th podcast you've listened to this week, I just dare you to stop listening to a podcast and actually go and action some of what you have learned in the podcast. And when you do that, you meet yourself. And like, I guess on a personal level, what I'm taking away is it's chatting with you has made me reflect on where I'm not taking risks in my life. Like I'm a big risk taker, but it's not until you're in the conversation and you're hearing other, like I love hearing your stories and I'm like, yes, like that is such a risk. That's inspiring to me. And I was thinking when you were sharing about being in cities and just being alone and doing it, like how many people in the world just want to go to a random incredible city like New York or LA or London by themselves and have the courage to just trust that they're going to be aligned with the people that are on their vibe. Everyone wants to do that. And like, I feel so blessed that I found that courage when I was young to do that as well. But so many people are still sitting in the hesitation of shouldn't I? You just need to go and actually action it and like overcome the fear that you're going to be sitting in a hotel room alone because you are the captain of that destiny.
You know, what's coming to mind is just the importance of showing up as a habit. And even if you're not prepared to take those risks, showing up and almost taking those risks is part
training.
Of it.
It's training.
And so you know, yeah. And I'm just thinking about traveling as this massive accelerator, this massive collection of social risks. And, you know, you don't have to go to a music festival alone. You can just like go traveling alone and go on a tour, or, you know, you don't have to set yourself up in these really challenging situations. You can take baby steps.
That was the other takeaway, actually. Social group. The thing that I reflected on as you were sharing that is so many people have that conversation in the context of success. Not enough people have that conversation in the context of self-expression. And actually that aspect of our interview today has really inspired me. And maybe that's something we can talk about on part two. Like, it's not just about leaving your social group when you want to do something like build a business. It's actually like, how are you feeling around your social group? Even if nothing else in your life changed, you work the same job, blah, blah, blah. Just being around people that actually encourage you to be more of yourself and to express and who actually want to meet the edges. I think that's been a big thing for me this year. I had a bit of a story that I couldn't find those people at home, which is where I am. Like, I've traveled the world to find those people. And then being here, I've had to really like just be like, okay, that's just a story. These people exist everywhere. And the people I have around me at the moment are just like, out of everyone my whole life, are the ones that are pushing me the most to be more of me and take more risks. Like, you can find these people everywhere, and it's in all of us. We all want this, but we all hold the keys for each other to unlock that permission and that safety.
We all have the keys within. Yeah. And really, courage is the key to unlock all the other keys. Courage comes in doses. And just briefly, tell me, what were the social risks that you took to find those people in your city?
I took a lease on a collaborative hub when the world was shutting down. I was like, fuck it. I'm just gonna take this lease on this commercial property and just spend however long we're not allowed to be around other people doing it up and making it epic. And then just like cooling it in. I was like, okay, if I'm going to be here, I'm going to create a hub that all of them will be magnetized to. And that hub's now called the New Earth Hub. And we all do random epic shit every day together. Like, it's a part of our culture to just push each other to the absolute like nth degree. And yeah, I guess that's the power of being challenged in life, is you've got to rise above whatever stories that are in your way or not. And I guess, yeah, for me, that's not, it doesn't really ever feel like a choice. You have to find a way.
Damn, that's badass.
You just do it, you know, and do it for the generosity of other people as well. I think, like, I so want people to fall in love with that. Like, last time I was at A-Fest in Portugal, I was like, I want everyone to get to know each other like properly before A-Fest. And I'd been to a few and I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to rent this epic boat and just trust that like people will come. So I took the risk first so that I wasn't like having to coordinate things and be like, who wants to get a boat? Okay, you pay this and blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, I'm just going to be generous. I'm going to go all in. I'm going to get the boat and then I'm going to invite people to be in that fun with me. And you know what was funny is so many people gave me feedback that was the best part of the trip for them.
Oh my God. But,
like, the risk is always the thing. However big the risk feels is equal to the amount of like amazingness you're going to create through jumping into the deep end. If it's not risky, you're not going to create that. You know, people aren't going to feel the vibe. And people ask me all the time, how do you create magic in your spaces? That's the key. When you take, you've got to take that risk in order to create enough expansion in the space. And on the outside, it might look like, you know, the same as what someone else is doing. But if it came from that place, then the seeds are pure. Like, I see people in my workshops and stuff, what might be like a tiny baby step for me is a mountain for them. But when they take a leap of courage into that mountain, then everyone else feels the expansion. So it's relative, yeah? Like, what is a risk for you? You know, you might look at what Jacuzzi does and be like, well, that's nothing to him, but it doesn't matter because the energy that you're operating within to take that risk in your own life is the payoff. Which is the gift too, because you'll just get to keep upping the ante, which is why your life becomes more and more expansive the more that you do it.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So let me know the next time, you know, because I'll go half. I'll go halves with you.
Yes.
Wow. And I'm so inspired, and I'm just, I want to sort of spotlight the risk of gathering, the risk of community building. And I think that once you have really desensitized yourself to these risks that we experience in an interaction, you can start to facilitate groups, and you can start to build community, and you can walk in to a room with hundreds of uptight people, and you can switch the vibe in like 10 seconds, right?
Is that?
And so, yeah, I love that. And I think that gathering and community building and bringing people into a boat that you decided to go all in on, that is such a valuable form of generosity.
Love.
is creating those interconnections and really nourishing connections, right?
And actually, I was in politics for 4 years, and one of the things I did as a commissioner, a federal commissioner, youngest in history, was I never changed what I wore to Parliament House. Can you imagine? Can you imagine federal Parliament House, and I was wearing ripped jeans? And just the fucking, like, the looks. But every time that would be projected onto me, I'd always just, like, be like, have a great day. Like, break the pattern.
Yeah.
And a lot of people judge me as, like, you're doing this to be intentionally antagonistic. And it's, like, the environment is so shut down. Like, I have no need to be significant in that way. Like, I actually don't care. But I know that my capacity to shift this is there. And I feel like I have a responsibility to it, because the tightness and the rigidity in that was going to take something like that to actually disrupt, like, and give permission. And actually, and even just that bold statement, like, meant that after a month or 2 months, I was walking down the halls of Parliament House and people were actually like, hey, Commissioner Gibson, like, recognition, acknowledgement, like, breaking that pattern became like, there was permission there was space there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's like, I don't know, that to me is one of the biggest legacies you can give, whatever your version of that is, breaking down the walls that are keeping people like contained and away from who they really are. Like, why does anything have to be anything? Why do we just accept these, like, these things? No one's happy within these frames.
Yeah.
Like, no one wants it to be that way, but everyone's just so scared to do something different.
Yeah. This is how social norms operate, right? There's actually this bias whereby we think everyone else wants to uphold the social norm, right? We think that we extrapolate what other people are thinking, and that prevents us from challenging that culture, right?
Amen.
We see everyone else participating in it. And it's just this, it's called pluralistic ignorance. So everyone really may disagree with the fact that adults aren't allowed on the playgrounds. You know, all the adults may want to be on the playgrounds. Like, I certainly do.
I definitely do.
But what people may extrapolate is, no, everyone else thinks it's immature and everyone else wants it to be this way.
Yeah.
And so we're really just, it's just all unknown. And I think this is such a huge, huge root problem of disconnection and conflict is we're extrapolating what other people are thinking. And I see that as one of the causes of these toxic cultures in groups, right? No one's benefiting. Well, certainly there's probably one powerful person benefiting, right?
Maybe. We don't even know who they are, you know? And are they really benefiting? That's the thing. It's like, define. Anyway, this is another episode. Kim I love Jong-un. You.
We got to interview that guy.
Yeah, let's get him on the podcast. Let's do the YMCA.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard he's a pro at Gangnam Style.
Yeah. That's too obvious.
Oh, yeah. Lots to dive into. And the last thing I'll say, Nicole, I have done exactly that. Like, I have shown up into the most formal environments and I have just shattered people's sense of what is acceptable, you know, like, and just quickly. So I remember I worked at a biotech company and, it was a super like just uptight culture. And, one day I brought in like a baguette on a stick and I started offering it to people because I was just French.
Outrageous.
Just outrageous. Holy shit. Yeah. So lots of fun examples that I could compliment yours, Commissioner Gibson.
Commissioner Gibson. Yeah. Jacuzzi. Imagine if Jacuzzi and Commissioner Gibson went back to Parliament House. Oh my God, there's so many ideas. Look, it's for another time.
We got to become politicians.
We got to get back in. I know. I did it for long enough. And I was like, no, I need to be a full-time messenger of love. This is, I've given my service. I just want to thank you for your generosity of spirit, not just in what you've given this interview and all of the insights and your amazingness, but just in who you are and how you communicate and the questions you ask, you even interviewing me in your interview, just like it's a special human. And I also want to say that I really honor and acknowledge your vulnerabilities in all of this. Like as much as it becomes a practice and it becomes second nature, it definitely doesn't begin there. And I don't think the vulnerability ever goes away. It's like, doesn't matter how many times you jump out of a plane, it's always going to feel a little bit like, holy shit, I'm jumping out of a plane. Like, the risk is still the risk, no matter how many times you take it. And I love you for that. I love you for just the relentlessness of saying yes again and again and again and again. And being in the joy and living every single moment like it was the last moment.